Headline news this hour for WPFW Washington and WBAI New York. I'm Darnia Samuels. Please be safe and thank you for listening.
Gold Mary in the bag and tied around my neck for my protection. I'm walking around, big old sack on my back, coming in your direction. What kind of tea do you like? I got it. I'm the medicine man, herb from the land, yeah. I'm the herb man, come see me. Oh, I'm the herb man, you all come see me. Hey, rosemary, calm your nerves, got peppermint leaf to get rid of my fever. I keep periwinkle to get some love now. Whoa, I got hug me clothes to make my backbone strong. Gold cola tonic for my blood, dandelion for my bones, y'all. I can leave. Keep away flies. Hot Lady Cayenne for my pressure. Oh, I'm the herb man, come see me. Oh, I'm the herb man, you all come see me. Get the children out the way now. No, you can't smoke this, sir. This is for salad. Yes, yeah, salad. Herb man, herb
man. And good afternoon. Good afternoon. I'm excited to be with you today. Very pleased to be on this afternoon and to be able to share with you. This is Dr. Theodore Watkins. The program is To Your Health, and we're excited because we're in the midst of a series on obesity. A series on obesity. Our goal is to help you, our listening audience, and your family and friends, to really, at the end of this month, to have made a major impact on obesity. Last week we had Wanda Tia of the Work It Studio and Wanda Women to be on, and we talked about fitness and its impact on preventing and reversing obesity. And today we have a longtime friend and colleague of mine. We've done programs together, and I've asked Larry Jones. Larry is a adjunct professor, facilitator. He has his private practice and counseling and relationships, and I called him. I said, "Look, when I thought about this topic, I thought about you." And so, Mr. Jones, we're excited to have you. Welcome to Your Health.
Thank you very much, sir. Glad to be here again. Thank you.
Now, when we think about obesity, a lot of people think initially about, you know, diet and exercise or the lack thereof. But one of the things that I think about when I think about obesity is stress and negative emotions. Mm-hmm. Now, am I on the right track when I have those thoughts that there's a relationship, a significant relationship between a person's stress and whether or not they are, overweight?
I believe that there's a direct correlation between a person's...
I like that word, direct.
Direct, yes. But with their stress and their being overweight. And I'm sure something you've already covered. You know, obesity is more than... It's considered being more than 20 pounds over the ideal preferred weight for that for one's body frame. So certainly people consider issues of... There's shame that's associated with that. there's guilt associated with being overweight. There is rejection being associated with being overweight. All those are types of stress inducers.
Okay.
That causes one to be even more.
These are things that occur once you're overweight. Once you are, we use the BMI as the gold standard,
right.
You know,
right.
Although there are certainly, modalities that are even more accurate, but we look at, you know, if you are, you know, 25, have a BMI of 25 or greater, or up to 29.9, you are overweight, and right. 30 and above, you're obese.
Right.
And certainly when you get to that level, many of these factors kick in. But even before we get to there, and that's a very important place to be, and we certainly want to get back there. But I want us to look at the genesis, the etiology, the cause, if you please, of a person getting obese. And I want, from your perspective, now we know from a physiologic perspective that stress increases cortisol, and cortisol increases belly fat. All right, we know that. We know that stress makes you more acidic, and the acidity also increases belly fat. So clearly, from that perspective, there's this genesis. But even more, have you seen evidences that being stressed, of having negative emotions, can seem to cause a person, whether it's through overeating or lack of exercise, to develop behaviors that can lead to what we call being overweight or obese?
I have seen a good question, well framed. I've seen folk that are, I've seen young girls that have eaten themselves into being overweight, that were originally of an ideal weight.
Yes.
But they then ate themselves into being overweight to keep from appearing physically attractive.
Man, I had a patient who came to me, and it was so powerful because she came to me to lose weight, all right? Mm-hmm. And she would go on our program. She would be very effective in losing weight. And this was a woman, all right? And then she would sabotage her program.
Yes.
You know? She would sabotage the program. And it caused me to question what was going on. And finally, I had an in-depth conversation with her. And she said that before she used to be slim and trim and very foxy, mm-hmm. and it attracted men.
Yes.
And it led to a promiscuous life.
Exactly.
And so she, subconsciously almost, you know?
Right.
Although exactly. She knew about it, subconsciously she ate to keep from being slim because she didn't think she could handle
right.
that and didn't want that particular way of life.
And then the other traumatic part of that is young girls, whether it happened at 4, 5, 6, or 7, when they're early teens, that have been sexually violated at that early age, themselves will start to eat again. Originally, they start to eat to cover the pain. It becomes feel-good food.
Right.
But then after they get bigger, they go exactly where you said, if I keep eating, this won't happen to me again.
Maybe it'll keep men away from me.
Away from me.
I won't be attractive.
Right. And the other component of that, many believe that the issues of rejection and fear and anger and depression are all stress-related, loneliness.
Yes, yes, yes.
Emotional disturbances are emotional disturbances related to overeating. So food then becomes both automatic and habitual.
Yes. Oh boy.
Sometimes eating is legitimate, and sometimes it's excessive.
Okay.
But at that, after a point, they're not able to even recognize when it's excessive because it's nighttime eating. It's hiding food, almost like a drug addict or alcoholic, hiding food in bedrooms and the sofa cushions. Actually, hiding food.
Just hiding food, yes. So that they can eat at a time when nobody is watching.
Without shame.
Because the
shame has already set in, the guilt has already set in, and unfortunately, one of the other things in our community is shame. Our communities, our homes, our schools are hard on shame. We shame people. It could be a simple matter of not being, for a young girl, not being asked to participate in double dutch.
Yes.
Because she's too big.
Yes.
We automatically exclude ourselves from certain activities because our weight does not permit it. We're not able to be to model because models typically aren't the big girls.
Right, right, right. I know I probably participated in that in an ignorant way, but growing up, you know, I always liked to win, you know.
Right.
And we would have athletic teams, and I was very good in athletics. And sometimes I'd be the captain, and I would choose.
Exactly.
And I don't want that person who is big and overweight or clumsy on my team, you know?
Exactly.
Because
exactly.
I want to win. And not knowing, so some of this could be an ignorance, not knowing that that behavior is setting up a pattern or is going along with a pattern that's already been set up that's creating these negative feelings.
Exactly. And then after a while, it becomes so formalized in the I don't want to call it victim, in the person's mind, that obesity gives them an excuse.
Yes.
You're not held to the same standard. For women, obesity helps to keep men away. Again, some of those have been sexually abused at young ages, and even that, 20 to 40% have been sexually abused, and it even affects their married lives.
Yes.
There are couples where after certain phases of life set in, the woman's weight gain may begin to accelerate, and then her own self-shame,
yes,
becomes a stressful issue, which makes them causes them to become more irritable, depressed, angry. You'll hear, muscle tension, and why am I having headaches? They're tired all of a sudden. They don't want sex anymore. Their stomach is upset. All those are stress-related issues. They either stress-induced or we ask which one came first. Did the depression come first or the obesity come first?
Yes.
Sometimes obesity causes depression, and depression causes obesity.
This is Dr. Theodore Watkins. Our guest is Larry Jones, a counselor, relations doctor, all kinds of things. But we're talking today about obesity and stress and negative emotions. We want you to give us a call if you have a question or a comment. The number here is 202-588-0892-588-0893. We're looking at this whole issue of obesity and overweight. I mean, and stress. So we're having this. Sometimes there's isolation and there's loneliness and all kinds, yes, of things. Anger, you know.
Yes.
Fear. All these negative emotions, which then affects the various hormones, the cortisol and so forth. And then it makes them less likely to exercise. And then that becomes an indirect.
And then that gives them an excuse not to exercise.
Yes.
I can't walk. It's too hot. I can't wear that. I can't go here. This is what I eat. I heard recently of a woman that says her 10-year-old daughter on a Sunday morning can eat 10 eggs.
Lord, have mercy.
That's not a 10-year-old doesn't feed herself.
Right.
A parent is feeding her 10-year-old 10 eggs at a setting.
Yeah, yeah.
It
yeah.
won't be long before now the she's dealing with, she is at 198 pounds.
At 10 years old.
At 10 years old.
Lord have mercy.
198 pounds. Can you imagine that? Stress. Her peers talk about her. She has to see herself, but they don't look in the mirror very often. They put things on clothes on without looking in the mirror. Self shame.
Yes, and this is not necessarily conscious. This is subconscious.
This is subconscious. This is all subconscious.
Yeah,
subconscious behavior. Stats show that obese teens have a higher incidence of mental health problems and anxiety than those kids that are not overweight or not obese.
Huh. Now you talked about when we were talking earlier in preparation for the program, you talked about these negative messages.
Yes.
Negative messages.
Yes.
Negative messages that are sent and messages that are received. Can you be more can you sort of elaborate on what you were talking about?
People that everybody wants to be accepted.
Yes.
And from our origin, our parents are the persons that we want to please. Children want to please their parents.
Okay.
When parents, however, in turn, as you said earlier, sometimes in ignorance, parents want to modify a child's behavior, but they do it improperly by saying, if you keep eating like this, you're going to be big as a house.
Yes.
Look at you now. You look like, you know, somebody undesirable.
Yes.
That causes the child shame, and those negative messages are played over and over and over in the child's mind because nothing else that they can do. They'll make
so they've received these messages from, say, a parent or some significant person, and then they start sending them out to
yes.
themselves.
To themselves.
You know,
same messages out to themselves.
I call that instant replay.
Yes, it is.
This instant replay. They play them over in their minds again and again and again, and it gets sound and color, and you know, it's 3D.
Right. Yes, it is.
Yes, and it becomes very, very real. The number is 202-588-0893. We're talking to Larry Jones about a subject that's so important to us, obesity, but we're looking at the emotional, the stress aspects of it. Give us a call with your questions or comments. Let's go to our first caller. Yes, caller, you're on the line.
Good afternoon, my brother.
My brother.
How are you?
I'm doing extremely well.
That's very good, very good. You're doing your part, education.
Yes.
What causes obesity? What causes stress? You have been doing your part, is educating the public, but there is another part which has to be done by some other people.
Yes.
That is, you are educating vegetarian food, how harmful it is to our health, but that food has to be provided by business people who care about our community.
Okay.
And those businesses have to be in our communities where people live, because these days people work 3 jobs, 2 jobs. They run between taking their children from daycare and then going home and cooking. There is no time for all this. People do not have much time to cook. There has to be restaurants which can sell healthy food.
Yes.
And that can be only provided by business people who care about our community.
Yes, yes, you're absolutely correct.
Some people with the means, some people who have the knowledge of good food and who have the money and who care about our community have to come up with restaurants in our neighborhood.
Okay.
Affordable and healthy and tasty. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to tie this in with our general topic, which is obesity and stress. And I think what my caller, my brother is saying is that sometimes this stress can come from the community, because the community is not supportive of the things that would support good health. I think that's the basic point that he was making, and that we need to become more conscious as a community. And I think that's absolutely correct. When I first came on air, I talked about the importance of us approaching this not as individuals, but as a community in terms of being able to grapple some of these issues. Now, we're talking about stress, negative emotions, and obesity, but the reality is that food is associated with it.
Yes,
sir. All right? Because there are certain foods that actually will make a person addictive.
Yes.
All right? To eating and overeating.
Sugars.
Yes. Many of the additives, the way the foods are grown.
Exactly.
You know, the way they are processed. All of this is a community kind of thing. And what we have to do is become more conscious of what's going on in our community. And as a community, say, we're not going to take this anymore. You know?
Right.
You know, I'm amazed when we looked at the Los Angeles Clippers. And what happened to Mr. Sterling? As it turns out, Mr. Sterling had been saying things for years.
Yes.
All right? For years. But individuals tried to deal with it. Even took him to court and spent all their money and lost, you know? But when the community stood up, all right?
Yes.
Then Sterling had to back down, you know?
And similar there. So what happens with us and families within his organization, it had been going on so long that it had become acceptable.
Yes.
Within our homes, the obesity goes on so long that we just accept it.
Yes.
Accept it while it's contributing to type 2 diabetes, while it's contributing to high blood pressure and cholesterol and joint problems and social stress and emotional stress.
And we actually think it's normal.
So much that we think it's normal. It's become the new normal.
You know? And we do things like obesity runs in my family. What runs in the family is a particular eating habit, exercise patterns.
Exactly.
Stress patterns, certain words. You hear people talking to children. And it would almost make you want to cry or fight. Yes. You know, sometimes the project come out in me and I want to go grab somebody by the neck. You know what I mean? You know what I mean, my brother? And just choke them because of the words that they're saying to these small children.
And then the children eat not just because they're hungry. They eat to make themselves feel good.
Yes.
Until they one morning you wake up and they're overweight,
and that brings more negative words. Lord have mercy. 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. We're talking about stress. We're talking about negative relationships and its impact on becoming overweight. And also being able to lose the weight. Now, one of the things, Mr. Jones, that I really want us to look at is that there are, I think, different kinds of stresses. We just talked about some stresses that we have accepted as being just normal, you know, and coming here on the highway, there are certain stresses.
Yes.
That I'm going to see, you know, and if I go at a certain time of day, I'm going to see even more. Right. And then certain people respond to the stresses, just pulling in front of you and, you know, blowing their horn and all kinds of things. Now these are we consider them normal stresses, you know, and for definition's sake, we're going to call these stresses normal. We're going to call working on a job with a boss who's irritable and demanding a normal stress. All right.
Yes.
We're going to talk about living with a spouse who sometimes says negative things and is comes in a bad mood because his boss has got on his or her case
right.
as a normal stress.
Right.
But then there's some other stresses, all right, that are,
yes.
that are not normal.
Yes.
A divorce, the death of a child or a parent or
yes.
you know what I'm talking about? These are some abnormal stresses that can really impact. How does one? Well, I'm going to let you ruminate on that. How you actually deal with these stresses? We're going to go back to the phones. I'm going to come back to that question because I want to be able to differentiate between these quote normal stresses and these severe stresses. All right. But let's go back to our phones right now. Yes, caller, you're on the line.
Yes, hello, Dr. Watkins. My name is Henry. I have a question, well, a comment first of all, before a question. I believe that stress is something that is individualized and is allowed by the individual to impact them and impact them positively in a negative way. In other words, they allow external stimuli to maybe impact them in a psyche that results in them having some type of negative response to that stress.
All right.
My question is, to what extent does that play in producing illnesses and negative effects on the body and the psyche when one can, if one can prevent the stressors from impacting on them if they have control over them?
Okay, I'm going to say, first of all, I agree with you, your definition totally. I believe that stress comes from within and not from without. That stress is our response to a particular stimuli. But I want the expert to tell us, if both of us are wrong or not.
I think.
Okay, I'll hang up and listen to you.
Thank you so much, Larry.
I think we're both right. If we could consider policemen and firemen in major cities have a high rate of stress, and they deal with it through alcohol and drugs.
All right.
In Nome, Alaska, where it's dark 6 months out of the year, the alcoholism rate is extremely high. Those are stressors. And when those folk are stressed, they try to relieve the stress by using another intoxicant that causes depression.
Right.
So some of these things can be come from within. You talked about the outside forces that we can't control, but we do have a reaction to them.
We react to them.
Most of us are taught not to be angry.
Yes.
And so we don't express our anger, but as I understand it, anger held in equals depression.
Yes.
We walk around. We walk around saying we're not going. I'm not going to be angry. I'm not going to deal with it. No, I don't deal with anger. I just don't address it.
Yes,
yes you are addressing it, because if it's not alcohol or drugs, many use food or sex or work, some activity to keep you away from dealing with those very issues, which equals stress.
Yes, that's real deep, brother. So that when we have this environment that is stressful, how much of it, I'm going to go a little deeper into his question, how much of it has to do with our definition? You know, I know there were times when certain events in my life would cause me to react a different way.
Yes.
And I chose to redefine what was happening.
Yes.
All right. Therefore, my response to it was different because my definition was different. You know,
exactly.
And in other
exactly.
words, it ceased to be negative to me because I defined it. This is not negative. You know, it's like Christ said, "Lord, forgive them, for they know not what they do."
No, not what they do. Right.
You know, it wasn't that he liked what was going on, but he redefined it so that now it's no longer a stressor.
Exactly. Redefining it in your own mind, but to go back to the connection and the correlation between negative messages. What negative message did I hear 30 years ago?
All right.
That causes me to respond a certain way now.
Yes.
It's not something that is in the forefront of your mind, but it's one of those things in the back of your mind that comes up. Somebody calls you some unsavory name, and you respond in a certain way. I remember I was driving through a traffic light one day. I cut somebody off, not intentionally, but the person was coming faster than they really should have been, and they yelled all sorts of expletives at me. I reacted internally.
Yes.
Boiling.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
But I couldn't jump out of my car and do something
but
unhealthy.
But you want to run him down. I'm going to personalize on this because I remember I was my wife and I went to this class one time called the Forum. And one of the assignments that they gave, it was a very grueling class, mm-hmm. from 7 in the morning to 12 midnight. I mean, ridiculous.
Oh,
for 3 days, you know. Mm. But the assignment the second day was to, when you got home, to write a letter to someone and forgive them. Now, I couldn't think of anyone that I needed to forgive because, you know, if you did something to me, Larry, I'm going to call you out.
Yeah.
We're going to go in the back room and we're going to deal with it.
We're going to deal with it.
And then we're going to come out and be, you know, so who do I need to forgive? And I thought about, I'm going to forgive my daddy for leaving us.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Someone that I consciously never really knew. All right. Because he left when I was very, very young.
Right.
And so I'm writing this letter to my dead daddy, forgiving him for leaving us, crying like a baby.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know those feelings was in me, Larry.
Right.
You know, I suppressed them so successfully.
Mm-hmm.
But when I started writing the letter, it started coming out, you know. It came out because it was down there. So clearly, we are able to suppress things, and that can have a tremendous impact on our health because negative thoughts, negative feelings clearly
produce negative behaviors.
and produce, you know, I did a paper one time entitled Stress, the Stuff Disease Is Made Out Of. I remember a text, a merry heart doth good like a medicine. So I want to know, you know, but a broken heart, but a broken spirit. I mean, but a, what is it?
That's a merry heart doth good like a medicine, but a broken something.
Spirit breaketh the bones.
Breaketh the bones. Yes.
All right. So I said, okay, that sounds good, but this is scientific, and so I started doing research on this whole issue of stress and its impact on the body.
Yeah, so true.
And what I found out was that cancer is increased, heart diseases can increase. Yes. All these diseases are increased by these negative feelings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obesity is increased. You know, our appearance, we get dermatologic problems. So in answer to the caller's question, there's a definite link between these negative feelings and many of the diseases that we are experiencing. You know,
and that link comes again because of when you're feeling sad. There's a difference between sadness and depression.
All right,
but again, sadness unaddressed turns to depression.
All right,
and then we have a loss of pleasure. I'm not doing the things that used to bring me fun. Used to bring me delight and joy. you're crying easily or quiet, staining your pillows at night in tears.
Yes.
A change in sleep patterns. If you're not sleeping well, the next day will be more stressful than usual.
Yes. So all these intertwine things.
All intertwine. Appetite. Things that we'll find to do to bring us pleasure where we couldn't get pleasure. The type of things we'll go into. They're all significantly interlinked to determine how we behave. Our good health or our less than desirable health.
So that there some things will cause us to eat more. Some things will cause us not to eat.
Exactly.
From an emotional perspective.
From an emotional perspective. Even David, you talked about, you made a reference, biblical reference. David in Psalms 39, 1 through 3. David even finally said, I had to look at my own ways. What is it that I'm doing? David had some traumatic things happen to his house. Happened as his own daughter molested in his own house. David had some other behaviors of his own that happened that he participated in. So David eventually got to a point where he had to look around and say, well, I wonder how much of this stuff is caused by other people or how much is caused by me.
In the final analysis,
David said, you know, a lot of this stuff I'm doing to myself.
Yes.
I'm in control of it.
And I think that's where I want people to feel that they're in control.
They're in control.
I understand the negative. I understand, you know, I had a patient who, just an outstanding young lady. But every time she came, she would be talking about her boss and the negative stuff that a boss, you know, and what I'm seeing in so many jobs here, you know, and it seems like the higher you go,
yes,
the worse it gets. You would think that, you know, you get your education, you know, and
right,
you get your
right.
good job, you wear your shirt, your tie, or your high heel slippers, and you're going into work, and things are going to be nice and smooth, and, you know, you're looking good, you're smelling good, but you're getting a whole lot of mess
yes.
thrown at you at the job, you know?
Exactly.
And so she was coming in feeling stressed. And so I told her, look, when your boss start acting crazy like that, first of all, understand that she's under stress, that somebody is whipping her head, you know,
right.
start laughing. I said, she already think you're crazy.
Exactly.
So just start laughing, you know, and not accept it into your spirit. You know,
right.
now
right.
I don't know if what I said, I'm not a psychologist, but it just seemed to me that her response to it could make a difference.
Could make a difference.
Now,
difference.
Am I right there?
You're exactly right. A lot of things that happen to us as children, largely we have, you know, we're at someone else's mercy.
Yes.
And once we become adults and persons responsible for our own behavior, for our own selves, we can make a difference in our lives. We need to think about what we're doing and why we do what we do. Thinking about what we eat and why we eat what we eat when we eat it.
There's a lot of deep things, you know, that
a lot of deep things.
This stuff is not simple because it seems that some children respond one way to stress and other children respond a different way to the same stressors.
To the exact same stressors. And those two children, you can ask them later in life, oh, we came from a wonderful home. One will say, the other one will say, I don't know which house you grew up in. simply because they learned to deal with, they while growing up, learned to deal with the mess that was going on in a way that could get them through.
Yeah, yeah. And so in reality, they didn't grow up in the same house. They were in the same physical environment.
The physical environment.
But their overall environments were different. I remember reading the life and times of Frederick Douglass, and he was, I believe, 8 years old, living up in Annapolis. He was a slave to Thomas and Elizabeth Orr. and their 8-year-old son. And Elizabeth started teaching him to read. And she was surprised that this little slave boy could read.
Hmm.
When her husband, who was a shipbuilder, came home after several months, she shared with him that she was teaching this little slave boy to read, and he was learning.
Uh-huh.
And Thomas, in front of him, said, if you teach a slave to read, he'll want to be free.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Frederick said to himself, if reading will make me free, I am this day free. At 8 years old, able to respond positively to a negative. What was it about him? Was it the nurturing of his mother before he was sold into slavery? What was it about him that he was able to bring up this kind of resolve?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Whereas many people around him obviously didn't have that same kind of resolve.
Didn't have that same resolve. Did not have it.
Yeah. We need to address these things. We need to do everything we can to give our children, you know, some that stuff.
Yeah.
That will enable them to be able to successfully navigate life.
But that means that we have to be willing. The first step in any 12-step program is to recognize that I got a problem.
Ah.
So we have to we the responsible ones.
Yes.
Having come to this point, have to acknowledge that I can do it differently.
Yes.
I can do it differently.
I
choose to do it differently. Yeah. It's a conscience. Daily, moment by moment choice, because it's easy to fall back into old habits. We walk across a field and we follow the path that's already made by somebody else. Do I want to follow that path, or do I want to make my own path?
Yes. We're talking about obesity because it is a major health problem. All right. It is a major health problem. But I actually became interested in obesity, not really being aware of the health problem. I was more aware of the psychological problem. You know, I grew up, your brother, when we were in school together, you know, he used to call me Weenie Belt, as in everyone else. All right. And I was very popular. Okay. Weenie Belt was a popular name, but deep down inside, I didn't like it. All right. I didn't like being skinny. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I got older and got more education.
Yeah.
I started understanding that being slim has some significant health benefits.
Yes.
But that being obese has some negative health benefits.
Yes.
All right?
Yes.
But in addition to that, they were also suffering some of the same kind of emotional trauma that I had suffered.
Yes.
And so I decided that I'm going to deal with obesity so I can help them deal with their trauma.
And let us not pass quickly over that word trauma, because we have typically looked at trauma as Hiroshima, 9/11, the Oklahoma City bombing. Those are traumas indeed, but our homes are traumatized also trauma centers all too often.
Yes.
More often than not.
Now you sound like a family counselor.
Because
What you have chosen to do, Mr. Jones, is to say, yes, we're in a bad environment, you know, and our environment really impacts us negatively.
Yes.
But the most important environment
is our home.
Seems to be our home.
Our home.
That our home environment can actually prepare us to deal with that negative environment outside, if it's proper. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And there's one presentation that I do called Our Homes, a trauma center.
All right.
In a trauma center, we don't batter and emotionally abuse those folks that come in injured.
All right.
We show them care, compassion, and concern.
Yes.
In our homes, when a child comes home from school that has gotten a bad grade or gotten a pink slip of some sort,
the first thing we ask them is, what did you do?
Yes.
And then the child is already emotionally defensive based on that question.
Yes, yes.
Rather than another response may be, oh, you must feel really bad about that.
Yeah.
Or rather than saying to a child, you're always eating so much food. Let's talk about eating at more appropriate times and eating healthier food.
You know, as you talk about that, I mean, I'm going back in my mind to my upbringing, you know, and like I said, my father wasn't there, and that was traumatic to me, very, very traumatic to me.
That's growing up.
Yes.
Yes.
But I can remember, you know, I wasn't that straight A student, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the principal one day telling me, how come you can't be smart like your brother, you know?
That was
traumatic. But I said in my mind, I'm going to show you, you don't know who you're messing with.
That's right.
But when I was coming home, I not on one occasion can I ever remember my mother getting on my case because of grades.
Right. Okay.
But rather, what I remember her doing is setting up an environment for me. And this is in the projects, Larry, Mr. Jones, this is in the projects now, setting up an environment for me to study, to grow things that I was interested in. She would go and get them and bring them into the environment. You know, I was interested in dissecting animals. And so she would get kits so I could dissect. You understand what I'm saying? So that what my mother did was create for me an environment that was nurturing and building of one's self-esteem so that I could go back out into the community and fight. So what I'm hearing you say is that if we built these kind of environments, these almost refuge centers at home.
Yes.
When a child comes home, you build them up and send them back out to war. But they go out knowing that they're going to win.
That they're going to be all right because somebody at home's got my back.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
I don't care what happens out there at home. I did have a, if I might share, and hopefully my nephew won't mind, grew up obese.
Yes.
He was heavier than the rest of us.
Yes.
I always felt bad because he couldn't keep up with us when we were walking.
Yes.
He couldn't run when we were running. He couldn't swim when we were swimming. He told me, several years ago that things that affected him for most of his life.
Yes.
To this day, he became an overachiever in certain areas of his life.
Yes.
Because he was dealing with something that nobody else would deal with, or he was ashamed. He was ashamed.
Yes.
To talk about his being overweight. So he said, well, maybe if I become this, they won't see my obesity. I become good at this, they won't see my obesity. I become good at this, they won't see my obesity. So the shame and the guilt that we build in, but his home became a safe place.
Yes.
We have to find safe places for people.
Yes.
Safe places for ourselves. Sometimes, I'm really going to get in trouble here, sometimes some churches are not even safe places.
Yes.
Because many churches promote shame-based religious practices.
Yes.
If you do such and such, you're a bad person.
Right.
Well, I don't know that bad. You know, God, you know, my God loves everybody.
Everybody.
Everybody. The children need to know that even at the social world's worst description of them, they're still loved.
The number is 202-588-0893. I know that we're talking to some people out there. If you want to share an experience, you don't even have to give your name. Give us a call. Something that impacted you positively or negatively, and therefore affected behavior, thinking, feelings. You know, give us a call. 202-588-0893. It's so powerful. We're talking, this is Dr. Ted Watkins. The program is To Your Health, and we're talking to Larry Jones. Mr. Jones is a counselor. He's a He's a relationship coach. He's dealt with 9/11 and so many of the other atrocities, traumas, and have helped people successfully negotiate that. And we're talking today of how we can negotiate this obesity problem, which is a major problem within our community. Once again, yes, the number is 202-588-0893. You don't have to give a name, but just share with us, because I know there's some people who are hurting out there. Yeah, let's go to our phones. Yes, caller, you're on the line.
Yes, hello?
Yes.
I'm enjoying your show.
Thank you.
My name is Sheila, and the comment I'd like to make is that I have two boys, okay?
Yes.
They're 2 years apart, and I'm a single parent, and one thing that I love from that I've always loved my childhood was reading. My mother always made sure we had books in the house.
Yes.
And she always took us to the library. In fact, when I was growing up in high school, I would skip school and spend the day in the library reading.
Oh, boy.
Okay. So my kids, when I was pregnant with my children, my favorite thing that I did was I was building up their library.
Yes.
That's when they were born, they had a bookcase with three shelves of books. Okay. And so I have pictures of my son, he's maybe 14 months old. And he just has all these books around him reading. He's trying to read, but he knows I've read to him, so he knows how to hold a book and read, you know.
Yes, yes,
and
yes.
And so, but the long story short, I'm going to show you how it paid off. When my oldest son, he didn't start any sort of preschool or daycare until he was four, okay? I couldn't afford it. So I stayed home at the daytime. I worked at night. So at 4 years old, I got him into a daycare, right? A daycare / preschool. Okay, to make a long story short, he starts kindergarten, okay? And in Montgomery County Public Schools, at the end of kindergarten, the goal is for the child to be reading on a level 3.
Right. Okay?
My son, at the end of the school year, was reading at a level 17.
Lord have mercy.
The teacher's been teaching for 25 years. She was beside herself.
Yes.
She was like, a parent meeting, she said, that daycare he went to didn't teach him this. You prepared him. It wasn't
yes,
daycare.
Yes, yes, yes.
You prepared him. And both my youngest son, the same thing. And then a kindergarten who was reading at a level 15. And that's like unheard of. And people, they're scratching their head. And to this day, my boys are both, they love to read. They're strong readers. I mean, they're like, Mom, we're out of library books. One day, my second grader, I picked him up from school from a half day once, you know, and the security person was nearby. So I drove up, because I was late, so I drove up to pick him up. And he opened the door first and he said, Mom, can you take me to the library? And the security person, she said, what? She said, oh, you have a good kid there. I'm like, yes, I do. So, we don't have much money.
Yes.
But books, my kids, they learn everything from books. And both my kids now are honor students. They're taking all advanced courses. They're honor students. My son's a ninth grader, and he's already taking AP courses.
Yes, yes.
And it's from reading from birth.
Yes, yes.
Introducing them to books. And
yes,
you know, it's inexpensive, and anyone can do it. Anyone can do it.
All right. And we appreciate that. You created that environment for your son, a positive environment, so that they can have positive self-esteem, you know, and can move on.
Similarly, creating positive environments in our homes about the way we eat.
Yes.
And what we eat.
Yes.
We determine many times our children's physiological state, their physical state. If we're feeding them all the wrong things, even at all the wrong times, and not promoting exercise and sunshine, we ourselves are contributing.
And we have to change our concept. I know when my my daughter, my oldest daughter, was just a baby. You know, we were just pushing the food in her and saying, what a cute little, is she cute, her little fat cheeks and so forth.
Right.
And then it hit me, man. Wait a minute, what am I doing?
Right.
And I told my wife, we got to cut it in half.
Yes.
We literally cut her intake in half.
Right.
All right. And of course, you've seen her. You know that she's nice and slim.
Right.
So we are created an environment in our homes, physically, psychologically, to set our children up to be overweight. All right.
Right.
And we have to change that, because with that comes negative emotion. Now, Mr. Jones, a lot of people, I know.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. Since the Israel-Hamas war began on October 7, 2023, the overall Palestinian death toll in Gaza has surpassed 37,000. Now, the United Nations Security Council is expected to vote on a ceasefire proposal at 3 p.m. Eastern today. This comes after the UN's Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, added Israel and Hamas to its list of shame, an annual list of nations and groups that are viewed as having committed serious violations against children during an armed conflict. The list already includes Russia, Al-Qaeda, and Boko Haram. Over the weekend, Israeli forces killed 274 Palestinians, including at least 64 children, during a military raid. This raid, which the Palestinian Foreign Ministry called a gruesome massacre, freed four Israelis who had been held hostage in Gaza since October 7th. Millions of people get sick with the flu and COVID every year, while thousands die from each ailment. The CDC reported that during last flu season, 71,000 people died of the flu and 40,000 people died of COVID. So far, we know of separate vaccines for each condition, but not a combined one that can be taken for both the flu and COVID. But work is being done to reach that goal. Today, vaccine maker Moderna announced positive late-stage trial results for its combination COVID-flu vaccine that's called mRNA-1083. Other companies have been testing a combined COVID-flu vaccine, but Moderna is the first to announce positive trial results. According to Moderna's chief medical affairs officer, Francesca Chedia, people in the trial who got mRNA-1083 showed an improved immune response compared with those who got the standalone flu and COVID vaccines that are available now. The results were true even for people in the trial over 65 years of age, which is noteworthy because older people typically do not respond as well to vaccines as younger people do. To your local news, in New York, former President Donald Trump is scheduled to have his pre-sentencing interview today with the New York City Probation Department in his criminal hush money case. Judge Juan Merchan ordered that a probation report be prepared ahead of sentencing after Donald Trump was found guilty on 34 felony counts of falsifying business records. Trump's probation interview, which is reported to be virtual, is a standard part of the New York process for preparing the report, which a judge may use to help determine sentencing. A probation department officer, social worker, or psychologist typically interviews the person who has been convicted and reviews that person's criminal record. To the D.C. area, in 2021, President Joe Biden signed a law that made June 19th, or Juneteenth, a federal holiday. Juneteenth commemorates the day in 1865 when the last enslaved people in the United States learned they were free, which was more than 2 years after then-President Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation that liberated slaves in the Confederacy during the Civil War. Tonight, the president is hosting this year's Juneteenth concert on the South Lawn of the White House. Performers are to include R&B icons Gladys Knight and Patti LaBelle, as well as gospel artist Kirk Franklin, jazz musician Trombone Shorty, rapper Dougie Fresh, and country singer Brittany Spencer. Tonight's Juneteenth concert comes as this year's presidential election is intensifying, with black voters sure to play an important role. In today's weather, it's currently about 73 degrees in New York and 80 degrees in D.C. That's all for your headline news this hour. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Please be safe, and thank you for listening.